the Fancy Six Pack Hour with your hosts, Joe Bob.
Ah, you're awful.
And AJ Applegar.
It's a mouthful.
All right. Welcome to the Fantasy Six Pack Hour. My name is Joe Bond, founder of FantasySixPack.net. With me, my co-host, AJ Epigarth. How's it going, man?
Pretty good. Same bad time, same bad channel.
Sure, I guess you can call it same time. It's never the same time with you. It's never the same time for you. It's all over the place.
Sure,
but anyway.
There it is.
News in your life, man. You got two new puppies. I'm sure that's keeping you some sleepless nights. Always.
Not as bad as you might think. We've got them in a crate, so they seem to be picking up with that pretty well, which is good. They sleep in there. They go in and they just kind of zonk out, and then they'll wake up at, like, I don't know, 3, maybe.
It's not horrible.
Want to go out. So, yeah, it's not too bad.
All right. So right now we are at a 7-7 tie, the beginning of the second quarter of the Packers versus the Cardinals. We have an Aaron Jones touchdown and a Chase Edmonds touchdown here. And, of course, the Packers are without Davante Adams and Alan Lazard on offense, and you know they got a bunch of other players out, especially on the defensive side of the ball. So I fully expect the Cardinals to take this one and fairly easily. But I mean, it's Aaron Rodgers, so you never know, man. He could pull some tricks out of his hat and figure some things out here. And the defense is playing pretty well against the Cardinals right now. So we will see what happens. But let's bring in our guest of honor for the week here, and it is Mr. Kale Clinton. He's a writer for Fantasy Six Pack. He also does some stuff over at Football Outsiders, so we are in good company tonight. What's going on, Kale?
Doing well. Great to join you guys, make the inaugural debut over here.
Yeah, man. It's been a long time coming. I've wanted you to come on here and talk about the topic that you write for during the season, which is touches and targets, kind of some trend data and just kind of figuring out like what to predict going forward and really what you want to do from a fantasy standpoint with all of that. And we will definitely get into that later, but first let's do our beer of the week.
Beer.
All right, man. You are the guest, so let's let you do it first. And we forgot to update that banner, Mike. So probably just take that one off. That's my bad.
And it's gone.
Yeah.
Going with a not quite a beer to start off beer of the way. Go with a cider. 1911.
One
of good. Syracuse's finest. Came up here over the. Actually got to the Beacon Skiff Orchard a couple weeks ago where they end up making this. It's a really nice time up there. I didn't realize how big of a craft beer city Syracuse is when I started coming to graduate school here, but big beer city, big cider city as well. So this is what I've been going with the last couple months. It's delicious.
All right. Hey, we don't discriminate alcohol here, man. You do you. AJ, what you got?
I am drinking the Three Floyds Crom's Beard India Pale Ale. It is a 7.5%er, single hopped IPA brewed with Strata hops. So that would be it. It's pretty good. Got this from a buddy of mine who's a big Three Floyds fan. He grew up in Indiana, so This one's for you, Nick. Well, technically it's for me because of you, so thank you. I already drank the other one, and it was delicious. So.
All right, cool. Well, I just popped mine open, and it's one of the other ones that you gave me. It's the 1623 Brewing Aqua Hop. It is the Imperial Red Rye IPA, and I'll tell you, I haven't had it yet because I just popped open. I'm not a big red IPA guy, and I'm also not a big rye IPA fan, so this will be very interesting. It is 9.9%, so it is going to be super strong, But cheers. Let's see what happens.
Bitter beer face.
It's actually better than I expected. It's actually pretty solid. I'll give it a good 3.5 on Untappd. It's not bad.
You're welcome.
It's actually not bad. I think the Imperial saves it because I'm a big Imperial IPA fan. So
yes,
that definitely gives it a kick in the right direction. So, all right, man. So Kale, let's jump into things here, and let's just start off here with some news and notes. And you know, one of the things that our producer Mike LaPlante brought up as something that we should talk about is just this whole Sam Darnold situation that's going on in Carolina, and you know, how he's definitely trending down and down so much that he got benched last week. Now PJ Walker came in and it was terrible, but I mean, is this something you're going to worry about, and something where, like, you know, he was a big popular streamer for a little while in fantasy? Is he off of your streaming list because of this, and you know, possible benching every week now, or, you know, he's got a short leash type of thing and just playing poorly?
It's a tough situation. I mean, I think people got really, I don't want to say ahead of themselves, but I think people got really excited to see Sam Darnold competent again for the first three weeks of his new tenure.
Yeah.
You know, looking okay there. But Ben Baldwin actually just posted on Twitter a graphic of the new quarterbacks on their new teams and how they perform relative to their PFF grades on former teams. Sam Darnold's playing just about where he did with the Jets. He really didn't go to a better offensive line situation. I think, honestly, the biggest issue with this is I'm really not touching anyone in Carolina not named DJ Moore that is on the team without Christian McCaffrey at this point. Christian McCaffrey is a massive factor on this offense. And, you know, Chuba Hubbard is supplementing and trying to, you know, replace it, but you can't replace everything that Christian McCaffrey brings to this offense. I think, honestly, one of the biggest concerns I've seen with this Darnold team is just his lack of weapons without CMC in the backfield. Robbie Anderson is having a terrible, terrible season. He's got right now 49 targets for 204 receiving yards. 18 of those catches, 18 catches on 49 targets, gives him a 37% catch rate, which is the worst of any receiver with 10-plus catches. And this is per Mike Clay of ESPN. Robbie Anderson is 4th in wide receiver routes, 16th in air yards on targets, and 69th in receiving yards. I can't tell you. I thought this would be a really strong connection because of Darnold and Anderson's days back on the Jets. I thought this would be a really, you know, it was.
You're not alone.
Yeah, it was crazy to me that Darnold's best option ever on the Jets passing-wise was now his third or fourth best receiving option on this Panthers team. And it just – I don't know if it's on Anderson's side of things because I don't think he's been playing as well in general. You don't get 37% all on Sam Darnold's shoulders for a catch, right? I think a lot of that falls on Anderson. But, I mean, Darnold's got no help at this point. I don't think there's any reason there are so many better – options to kind of stream. There are enough good quarterbacks in this league where you don't have to keep relying on Sam Darnold at this point.
I agree. We need to see better days before we start believing in him. I mean, look, a lot of it was, you know, what, after week three, he was leading the league in rushing touchdowns. We knew that wasn't going to keep going. And when that stopped happening, he fell off the map real quick. So Are we totally surprised? Probably not.
No. I own Darnold and almost every league, I feel like, because he was just that go-to late round guy, you know, as a backup or, you know, possible third quarterback in a super flex leagues. You know, I liked the upside. I liked the connection with Anderson, and Anderson was coming off of a pretty solid year last year. Mm-hmm. You know,
again, receiver.
granted, that was with CMC injured again, so he's injured now and Anderson hasn't done anything. I mean, he's just invisible. So I also own Anderson in a lot of leagues, and I'm very disappointed in myself in these picks. So
I think you'd have some sort of positive variance at one point or another where, you know, that less than 50% catch rate, less than 40% catch rate, you know, that can't hold forever. But I mean, it's really not looking great.
but it keeps happening. So it's like, I mean, you watch these games and they're just like, throw to Robbie Anderson, doink, right off of his hands. You're like, nah, never mind, I'm done. It's just not going to happen.
Yeah.
So time to move on, guys.
I agree.
It's just like, ugh. All right, so next topic here, and, you know, we got some trades. Maybe not one of the exciting ones we were looking for, but Mark Ingram was traded from the Houston Texans to the New Orleans Saints. I think this is more interesting than people are taking, you know, or really giving it credit for, and not maybe so much like from the Ingram side, because it's Mark Ingram. Okay. He's clearly going to play backup to Kamara. But, Kale, I want to ask you, you know, how does this affect Alvin Kamara going forward? Like, is it really as bad as some people are making it out to be, or is it sort of like, eh, I think he'll still be all right?
No, it can't be that bad. I mean, so much of the Saints offense has really flown through Kamara at this point, even with Jameis in the fold. Honestly, I think it has more to do with where the Texans currently stand. I mean, they had such an interesting sort of backfield scenario where they were just bringing in every back that was halfway decent 5 to 6 years ago, whether it was Rex Burkhead or Philip Lindsay's on that team now, David Johnson's still on that team. But the I think the biggest thing comes down to, you saw Brandon Cooks tweeting after, like, this is bullshit, this sucks, the, like, really bad. Like, he's not happy with this Texans team. I think he's going to get moved at some point. Brandon Cooks currently is a 31.2 target.
Oh, he's ridiculous, yeah.
Just the entirety of the Texans offense.
Like, sixth highest in the NFL, I think?
Fourth.
Is it fourth?
Only,
yeah.
Only Cooper Kupp, Devontae Adams, and Deebo Samuel rank higher than him in target share on the year right now.
I knew it was high. I for some reason thought it was six, but yeah, fourth is still super high. So
yeah, I mean, it has to tell you that this Texan season is lost at this point. It doesn't really look like there's a.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it just does. Like, if they're moving, who was their leading rusher at this point? Mark Ingram. I can't imagine that they're keeping Brandon Cooks in the fold at this point.
I mean it. Shockingly, I think their leading rusher as far as yards is it is actually David Johnson, but as far as attempts, it is Philip Lindsay. So that's not good. So I don't know what's going to happen in Houston. I mean, I went and snagged up Philip Lindsay because he was the only Houston player. I mean, I would imagine David Johnson was probably still out there too, but I don't know. I just think Lindsay's
better. Not
still
doing anything for you, though.
Neither is Lindsay, so it doesn't matter.
Pass catching specialist.
It doesn't matter. Backs. They're both doing nothing.
Yeah.
So
atrocious.
I spoke about this last night on the Going for Two podcast with Jeff Lambert, and I said that I actually thought this was a good thing for Alvin Kamara in the long run, and the reason being is if you look at his attempts per game, it is super high. I mean, he has over 50% of his most carries in one season already, and we're through six total games for the Saints. He's not built to sustain that kind of a role. So Ingram's going to be able to come in and spill, you know, some of those rushing yards. And like, he's not really been super efficient on the ground game either. I mean, he's averaging 3.7 yards per carry. He's been 4.7, 4.6, 6.1 in his career, yards per carry. It's because he's just getting pounded, you know, in there, and that's not what he does. Mm-hmm. He's still going to get his, you know, receptions and things like that, and he's actually below average for that right now, but not by much. I think it's a good thing. AJ, do you agree or disagree with that?
I do. I mean, he's... You would think he should be familiar with this offense. He played in it. And when he was there, Kamara was still the lead guy, but he was super valuable. I mean, this was one of the teams that you could own both of these guys.
Yeah.
And start them most weeks, you know, start Ingram most weeks because he was involved enough. And,
right.
And he was getting enough volume to warrant a flex play, you know, especially during bye season. So I like the move. You know, anybody that's in Houston and that can get out, kudos to you. I know it's well deserved, I guess. You've done your time.
I don't think we're expecting much from Ingram, but I think just from the standpoint of being able to spill a little bit and get a little bit of rest for Kamara is going to be a good thing, because we've seen him get banged up too. Like, that's the thing. Kamara has been a banged up player multiple times in his career. So he's just not built to take on that kind of workload and getting hit that much. You know, in the past game, when he catches it, he's out in the open and he can get out of bounds and that kind of stuff. And, you know, they're just pounding him up the middle. So, am I going to grab Ingram as a possible, you know, handcuff type player? Maybe, but I'm not really that in love with it. But again, I think this actually helps Kamara as much as people are groaning on Twitter and elsewhere. Like, if they roster Kamara, going like, oh no, now I'm not going to get all the work. Like, that could be a good thing, guys. He's always had a complimentary back with him. So
in any touchdowns that Ingram would theoretically, you know, vulture away from him, or a touch share that he vultures away, Kamara's probably making back in the fact that he's now got rested legs, and it's, you know, it's a much greater big play potential at this point, because he actually, you know, he's not being ground into the
correct.
He's running to the ground at this point.
Well, I feel like they also either would have gone to Ingram or Hill when he's healthy. So it's like, who cares? They were going to go to one of those guys most likely, and they weren't going to go to Kamara. I mean, Kamara only has this season, what does he have? He has one rushing touchdown, so it's not like he's getting those anyway. So, I mean, he's had a ton of rushing touchdowns in past years. He had 16 last year, which was absurd. I think overall it's a good thing, and we'll just have to wait and see, I suppose. So, all right, let's jump into these touches and target trends that the article you write every week for Fantasy Six Pack. So I am kind of focusing on running backs with some of the teams that I'm going to ask you about, or that we're going to ask you about, but then we'll let you kind of have the floor and bring up some other interesting teams. You know, you obviously go with the receivers in the passing game as well, but I'm looking more at running backs, and I'm going to start here with the Lions, and that the fact that, you know, Jamal Williams early on, it was basically a 50-50 split with Swift, and, you know, especially in the passing game. But now we're seeing Swift just kind of take over that. Is that a trend that you have seen as well and that you think is going to continue going forward?
Yeah, I mean, what really surprises me about Jamal Williams' usage is that it honestly was as split evenly as it was to start the season. Currently, as we're looking at it, the Lions passing game completely operates out of DeAndre Swift and TJ Hockenson. The two account for 40.4% of all targets on the season in terms of target share, and that's up to 45.6 in the last three games. It's a weird situation where it's really those two guys or bust. In terms of the wide receivers in Detroit, you know, especially in the passing game, like, Amon-Ra St. Brown has looked a little bit better. He didn't have a target against the Rams, but in his last three games with targets, he's had 23 of them for 18 receptions and 161 yards, and his outburst of performance has now tied him with Khalif Raymond for most targets on the team. Or he's just fallen short of Khalif Raymond, but he's got just as many receptions as him at this point. Actually, two less, my bad. I'm looking at a different thing. But Jamal Williams' usage in the passing game, especially, like you mentioned, is really falling off a cliff. Half of his targets, he's got 18 on the season. Nine of those come from a week one performance
against
the 49ers. And since then, he's had four in the last four games, two of those games seeing zero targets. His snap count is slowly decreasing, and I think a lot of DeAndre Swift's effectiveness as a running back comes very heavily in the fact that he's super involved in the passing game.
Mm-hmm.
And I think at this point, if you're trying to salvage any points for Jamal Williams, it's mostly coming on the ground at this point, because he's all but been removed from this passing offense.
Yeah, I totally agree. And that's what I've been seeing as well. At least he is still used in the run game, which is kind of surprising because in Green Bay, I felt like he was used a lot in, I know I don't have the data, unfortunately. I'm trying to look it up right now, but I mean, you know, he saw 35, 40 targets a year in Green Bay. He's still sort of on track for that, but I thought we would see a slight uptick in that in an offense where Swift just didn't seem like he was going to be the guy ever, it felt like, and now he is just taken over, which, I mean, he's turning into the DeAndre Swift that I kind of always expected. I've always liked this kid. AJ, you got any thoughts, or you want to just jump out here to this other team?
Yeah, I'll jump on the next one here. Our boy, Mr. Herbert, has now outrushed Damian Williams in week 8. So do we expect this to continue? I mean, he played his ass off 2 weeks ago when Williams was out as well. But, I mean, what are we going to see once Monty returns? I mean, how involved can we really think that Herbert and Williams are going to remain?
Well, I think at this point it just kind of flips who Chicago's using as their RB2 in their offense, because Damian Williams was seeing moderate, a pretty competitive RB2 snap count. It was obviously the David Montgomery show, but David Williams was getting good secondary snaps and getting some decent opportunities. But Khalil Herbert has just burst onto the scene. He didn't have more than 5 snaps in a game until week 4, where he had 7 snaps. And then week 5 had 34, week 6 had 54, week 7 had 51. He's just plain outperforming Damian Williams at this point. He immediately started receiving 18 carries a game after that week 4. He's at 18, 19, and 18. He's already surpassed Damian Williams in offensive production despite his limited usage midway through the season. He's really looked special out there. He's really fun back to watch. And I think that Chicago actually does have somewhat of a role for him going forward. Because what's also really interesting to me is that it's taken 2 games for Herbert to generate 8 targets, I think, in the passing game, and the entire season Damian Williams is at 14. So in 2 games he's been able to do what Damian Williams has in 6, and he's already surpassed his rushing totals. So I think Chicago's got a solid skill position player, a good RB2. It's David Montgomery, so it's going to be his
right
slower run, but I think they've got a good weapon. And if Matt Nagy's still got a head on his shoulders, he's still trying to actually do things in Chicago, he'll find a way to get Herbert involved, because he's just flat outperforming Damian Williams at this point.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about Matt Nagy having a head on his shoulders. We're not sure about that, so who knows what he'll do. But, all I got to say is, and I'm going to do it again just because, and it's go Hokies, man, Khalil Herbert, he is balling out. He's doing exactly what he did at Virginia Tech last year. He came in, and everybody's kind of like, who's this guy? And he crushed it, man. He just flat out amazing. So I like this kid. I think he can be something, and we're seeing it. I agree with you though. Like, as soon as Monty comes back, it's his backfield. But I think the only thing I kind of wonder, if I had Monty, like I would sort of be worried that Herbert could actually take a little bit more work out of it than Williams would have, because Williams wasn't really doing much with what he was doing.
He didn't even play last year, so you would think that he'd come in refreshed and ready to roll and whatever.
Sometimes that year off doesn't do you any good, man.
Yeah, no, I mean, ask Ricky Williams. Oh, wait, he was actually kind of good.
No. Ask Le'Veon Bell.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Even in the passing game, Montgomery, though, like, Montgomery's not getting too much usage. Allen Robinson is just – I still don't really understand what's happened with him. I thought it was going to be a massive contract year for him, and he's just – he's doing nothing right now. And, with Darnell Mooney as your wide receiver 1, like, you're going to need more weapons in this passing offense. And
I don't think there's anything he can do, unfortunately. That's the problem. You know, the one thing that I think is getting overlooked is, like, what happens with Tariq Cohen? He's somebody who nobody's really talking about, and I don't even know what his time frame is for coming back. He's just totally forgotten.
I was about to say, I haven't even thought of that name this season.
And I mean, I guess you don't really need to, and Khalil Herbert's potentially playing better than Cohen has. But 8 days ago sounds like he won't return anytime soon. So whatever that means, I guess there's still no timetable. So yeah, I guess I wouldn't worry too much about him. So let's move over here to the third and last team that I want to bring up. And it is the Atlanta Falcons. And, you know, a lot of people were coming into this year, me sadly included, that thought that, you know, Mike Davis could really solidify himself and be at least an RB2 on this team. The Falcons are always known for having a pretty solid offense, and it's starting to come around. In years past, not the greatest run game, but they haven't really had anybody. But, you know, we saw what Mike Davis did last year in Carolina without CMC there, and he was mostly good. He has really fallen off the map, especially recently, and somehow been passed by Cordarrelle Patterson, who I would have never said was a startable fantasy player ever in my life, it feels like. But, you know, we saw last week, Patterson saw 73% of the snaps compared to Davis. What do we make of this? Is Davis even, like, I mean, I don't want to say he's droppable right now, but he's getting super close, right?
It's really getting up there. If it hasn't gotten there already, because it's just at least I'm pulling it from Tennessee, where Arthur Smith is running there, and I understand it's a very different, you know, Cordarrelle Patterson is not Derrick Henry, but it really relies on just a handful of strong, like a 1 to 2 skill position players, 2 to 3 really. But I mean, Ridley is kind of putting up a Robbie Anderson type deal where 52 targets, 281 receiving yards. He's been the lifeblood of this offense. He's the only wide receiver on this Atlanta Falcons team with consistent double-digit target numbers, and he's, you know, really not doing much with it.
Mm-hmm.
Cordarrelle Patterson's been massively involved in this passing game for everything that he's doing in the run game, and I think that is such a big difference in this conversation between Patterson and Davis, just because what Patterson can add as you know, just the shifty, having some wide receiver background, he's a truly, like, almost reminds me of, like, is Darnell Robinson out of Michigan that was just labeled like skill player or like offensive weapon. Like, he can kind of, like, he's,
yeah, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, he can kind of do anything in terms of what's going on with this offense. He's really versatile. He's been, you know, pretty exceptional on the, he's not, you know, shattering records or anything, but he's doing a pretty decent job on the ground as well.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit worried about the return of Russell Gage eating into his contributions in the passing game, mm-hmm. but still just what, like, Patterson's got, like, really high big play potential, like, has a penchant to kind of just break plays off at random. I had him in targets and touches pretty early, I think probably week 3. So I've touched on it a little bit at length, but I thought it was sometimes the targets and touches I become prisoner of the moment, and these guys end up having a little bit shorter of a lifespan, or I'm coming right near the peak of the trend, and guys kind of drop off after that. Cordarrelle Patterson has really, you know, maintained his momentum and stayed really strong throughout the season.
He's like actually starting to pull away from Davis, as I mentioned. And, you know, if you look at, like, season-long data, you know, you look in the fact that, like, Mike Davis actually has more attempts. He's actually only got 9 less targets than Patterson. But in the recent weeks, it's, like, drastic. And, like, snap share, as I've said, like, I don't know. I mean, Mike Davis just isn't performing, so maybe they're just looking at it, and Patterson's like, averaging 4 yards, over 4 yards of carry. He's got four receiving touchdowns. I mean, dude's a big dude, like 6'2", 238. I mean, he's just a big guy. Like, Mike Davis is a bowling ball, really, when it comes down to it. And, I mean, he's big, but he's also short. I mean, he's 5'9", 220. But it's like, I mean, Patterson gets that ball, and he just looks... I mean, he's a huge running back, honestly, when you look at him. You're like, okay, most running backs right now are not 6'2". So, yeah, it's going in Patterson's way, and you know, I was able to snag him in a couple leagues. But AJ, thoughts here before we.
The only thing that annoys me about Patterson, because I don't own Davis anywhere, aside from maybe best ball, which clearly isn't helping me. I was able to get Patterson in Razz Bowl, and he's been awesome. But he doesn't have running back eligibility.
Oh, yeah.
For whatever reason. Like, I think he does, but they won't put him into my running back slots. And I was doing pretty well. The past couple weeks, I've fallen off a little bit, especially last week, because pretty much my entire roster was on bye. I did have enough people to plug in and actually fill a roster, but it wasn't very pretty. So
it wasn't pretty for a lot of people last week. Don't worry about it, man.
I
guess, like, you know, going forward with him, I don't really see how he slows down. I know you mentioned Gage, and you know, obviously Pitts is picking up a little bit of steam. I guess the only thing that I could see slowing him down is Ridley actually connecting more, and which is something I fully expect to be happening. I just don't see Ridley not being able to, you know, be a little bit better than he has been. You know, we've seen him without Julio Jones many, many times, and he's been like a wide receiver one, and right now he's not that. So with the target share he is getting, I expect Ridley to be able to pick things up, and maybe that could cut into Patterson's work, because if Ridley's making plays down the field, it'd be less yardage for Patterson to get. But, I mean, Patterson's still a steal, you know, off the waiver wire in most leagues at this point. So,
I will say before we jump off, even with the, you know, big uptick in production from Kyle Pitts, even with, like, Ridley can only get so many targets. He missed week 5, but weeks 2, 3, 4, 7, he went 10, 11, 13, 10. So he's still getting, you know, a ton of volume going his way. You can only throw to the guy so many times, but even with both these guys firing at all cylinders, Patterson's still picking up 5 to 6 consistent targets a game. So I think he's honestly kind of ingrained himself as a genuine piece in this top passing offense going forward. I think no matter what happens, he's probably guaranteed he's going to see, you know, Matt Ryan's going to be looking his way a consistent amount of times.
Yeah, we do have a question real quick before we jump into your teams here, and we got a. So I took the gamble and started Rodgers. I mean, look, a lot of us did. You know, if you have Rodgers, you're probably starting him in most leagues. But now he's paying the price. Yeah, it's not a great game for him so far. To make it even better, I have Eckler, and we all know Eckler. You know, most of us, I think, know at this point that Eckler was put on the injury report today with a hip injury. Never good for a late week injury report ad. Well, I mean, what are the chances he plays and plays well? I mean, I think it's all going to come down to how he finishes up. Like, we just don't know if he's going to play. Like, this could literally be like, oh, it's sort of sore and he's just taking the day off because he doesn't really need the practice time. I mean, if he returns, I think he's going to play, and I think you have to start him. I mean, I find it hard to believe you'd have anybody to start over him anyway. So, I think you're just going to start him, Shane. If he does actually be active, I don't, does anybody disagree with that?
I don't. I think he's too valuable. I mean, I wouldn't
like RB2 right now or something like that. So it's great.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't expect to see what he's been doing. If this injury turns into something that is more of a nagging issue. But yeah, I mean, I would still start him.
Yeah, I mean, they could cut his workload back a little bit, and he could still probably play perfectly fine and produce for you. So I think that's what you're looking for here, unfortunately, Shane, from Eckler. So, all right, Kale. You got any other teams that you want to bring to our attention as far as target and trend, you know, targets and touches trends?
Before we depart from the running backs, I did want to touch on Kansas City quickly because we are getting to the point where Clyde Edwards-Helaire is probably going to come back from injury somewhat soon. I'm not totally sure of his timetable, but it's probably it's on the horizon. And I'm really trying to figure out what to make of the workload going forward, because depending on where you look, the Kansas City Chiefs have not been that much better running the ball with Darrell Williams in the two games that Williams has taken over as starter. If you're looking at Ben Baldwin's EPA per play numbers, in weeks 1 through 5, Kansas City ranked 14th in rush EPA per play and 3rd in rushing success rate. The last 2 weeks, they've been 24th in rushing EPA per play and 13th in rushing success rate. And Williams is just not – he's been serviceable, but I don't think he's put together the starts that are going to make him just a world beater for this Kansas City team. 21 carries for 62 yards and 2 touchdowns in week 6. I mean, very respectable performance, obviously. 2 touchdowns help a ton. 3 receptions on top of that for 27 yards. Last week, 5 rushes for 20 yards, 3 receptions for 30 yards. It's just – I'm so confused what to make of this Kansas City offense at this point, just because it's nothing of what I expected it to be. Yeah. I thought coming into the season that Kansas City had the worst this is the worst offense they've had of the Pat Mahomes era. And we touched on it a little bit in the pre-show, but Kansas City's always had a reliable veteran running back, whether it was Kareem Hunt when he played there, LeSean McCoy, Le'Veon Bell for whatever he did. It was at least a veteran presence in the room that could kind of get guys going. It was someone you can lean on when you needed it most, even if it wasn't going to be, you know, the most efficient running. It was going to be strong veteran running, and the pass game's always needed an extra weapon with Sammy Watkins. As much as we like to lambast him from a fantasy perspective, just having that guy as a presence makes the defense, like, he commands more respect from a defense than a Byron Pringle or a Mecole Hardman at this point.
Correct.
And Kansas City's going to have to find new ways to get this offense going beyond their big three of Mahomes, Kelce, and Tyreek Hill. And maybe it's a little bit more varied of a workload between Edwards-Helaire and Darrell Williams, but it's neither have looked great at this point.
Yeah.
So
let me ask you this. So the Chiefs was a team I almost brought up, but yeah, I wanted to stop at 3 and give you the floor. So I'm glad you brought them up. So the one thing that I wanted to ask you about them is, you know, before CEH got hurt, we saw the snap share and we saw the touches go up for Williams, you know, each week, it seemed like. And then the injury happened. So, of course, you know, we saw him take over. But before that, you know, we were seeing it kind of come close to the middle. Do you, with the way Williams has played without CEH, do you see that continuing, or is there any world where you see Williams kind of being, I guess, quote, the lead back, if you want to give anybody that role on the Chiefs right now?
I wrote about Darrell Williams the week right after the CEH injury, and I talked about how he was, from an EPA perspective, just in terms of the opportunities he was given, he was comparable with Edwards-Helaire in the run game, where there wasn't too much of a difference. Some days, mm-hmm. Edwards-Helaire performed more efficiently than Williams, and some days vice versa. But what was consistent across the board was that Darrell Williams has vastly outperformed Edwards-Helaire in the passing game, especially from an efficiency perspective. So that makes me think that his targets are that much more valuable than Edwards-Helaire's. And if you look at the target share for Kansas City at the moment, even coming into this season, Williams is getting a consistent 3 to 5 targets. He had none weeks 1 and 2, but since then he's maintained at least 3 targets a game, 4 targets a game. Edwards-Helaire's got the same numbers, and they don't have nearly the same efficiency metrics. You can go check my original post. I think it was from week five. Actually comparing the two if you want to look it up for yourself. But it's that's really the only place that I could see Williams getting quote-unquote a starting role. I think it's honestly going to come down to true split back and trying to, you know, I think it's probably going to be closer to split touches. Maybe Edward Dealer starts more. And I think Chiefs are probably going to ride the hot hand where they need to, because this team just needs – this team needs some sort of momentum to swing their way at this point.
They've yeah, had, it's been they've bad.
A rash of bad luck. You know, and I think there was a PFF tweet that Pat Mahomes is – has a 100% rate of turnover-worthy plays turning into turnovers this season, something along those lines. It's really bad. They are historically unlucky. So if they've got any positive variance shaking their way, they'll probably run the hot hand of a running back, and seeing what Darrell Williams can do in a passing offense, I think that's where he would end up probably taking over a starting role if they end up leaning more on running back passing to try and create some sort of variance in this offense and trying to spice things up beyond their top two targets.
What about Josh Gordon? I mean, he's been an absolute non-factor. We know that the guy is talented when he's, you know, healthy, we'll say. I mean, is this just a matter of him still trying to learn the offense? Is it a matter of just Kansas City not playing all that well overall so far this year? I mean, do you see him getting involved in this target share at all, or is it a decoy?
It's a decoy. It's really head scratching me at this point. Again, this is such an anomaly for the Chiefs. No one I don't know how many people expected this team to be as bad as it's been through 7 weeks offense, and it's still been fine offensively in terms of like. They're still pretty high up on DVOA. They're still pretty high up on EPA per play metrics, but it's nowhere close to where they've been the last few years under Mahomes. But it's so tough to read Josh Gordon, just because last time we saw him on an NFL field, he had two catches for the Seahawks for, you know, a pretty mediocre yard total, no touchdowns for the Seahawks. Last time we saw him in an NFL uniform. This was last time he was on a football uniform. He was playing fan-controlled football, catching Hail Marys from Johnny Manziel. Like, that's the most recent tape we have on him. The most viable NFL tape we have on him is nearly 2 years old at this point. And my judgment gets clouded because I was such a big Josh Gordon guy. Like, I still remember reading the Bleacher Report feature on him. I still remember his insane days with the Browns, and I loved him as a Patriot. But it's... And I get really excited. He sells me every. I'm ready to get hurt again. He sells me every time when
you and half of Twitter, man. It is crazy.
Well, when you see reports coming in that Andy Reid saying that he's coming in at 7% body fat and he looks like an absolute machine.
He's
like,
he is.
How could you not get excited?
Marijuana is a hell of a drug.
I mean, honestly, who knows at this point what's going to go on with him. I would think is what you're saying, like they need to try something different to spark this offense a little bit. Why not get Gordon a little more involved and see what happens? Like, in my opinion, they've got too many like go deep guys. You know, they've got Hill, they've got Pringle, they've got Hardman, they've even got DeMarcus Robinson. That's what they do, right? Mm-hmm. It's been Kelce and the running game is like their only underneath guys, and teams are just crushing that, and they're just being like, and they're doubling Hill deep and leaving the other guy open, but the other guy isn't performing. So it's like, whatever. Now we're seeing Hill's the target share for a couple of those guys. It's so like, why Gordon can also be, he's a big guy too. Like, why not give him, he's 6'3", 225. He's a bigger guy. Like, he can be your underneath.
He's good with that underneath, you know,
he can be absolutely
out slants. I mean, that's where he excels, because as soon as he gets the ball and he's in open space, he's like Kamara.
We do forget he is 30 now and he's had plenty of missed football time. So he's not what he was. Like, you do remember like the year where he blew up in Cleveland, he had a monster, like, yards after catch. He was just like, he was downfield guy as well. Like, that was an amazing year for him. So he's not going to be that guy, but I think they could use him in a different role and that could spark this offense. But yeah, that's an interesting question that you had about Gordon. You got any other teams, Kale?
I might be a little bit biased here, but again, this is a one game sample size coming against the New York Jets. But I mean, it's starting to feel like the New England Patriots have some kind of blueprint going for this passing offense. This is the first time all season Johnny Smith and Hunter Henry have been consistently getting involved. I am extremely high on the Kendrick Bourne train because he's not gotten the target share that I thought he would as a guy that was pretty highly touted coming into the season. Since week three, 8 targets week 3, 4 targets week 5, 5 targets week 3, 2 targets week 6, 4 targets week 7. But he's performing extremely highly, and he's doing a lot with what he's been given on this team. Against the Jets, he did have that passing touchdown, which is going to skew things. But even still, what a very solid game of just four catches, 68 yards on 4 targets. The longest of 46. He's doing a great job getting open in space. He's really breaking things open. And if you're just looking for a quick roster plug-in, it's a bit high variance because he does have those games where Mac Jones really isn't looking at him. But there's going to come a point at some point where this team goes away from Nelson Aguilar, because I get how high they've paid this guy, but he's really underperformed the contract that they've handed him. And that number's only going to get uglier next year. I think they've really landed value pick in Kendrick Bourne, and the athleticism that he's shown while he's been playing in the limited opportunities that they've given him as essentially wide receiver 3 at this point have really, really been impressive. It's gotten me really excited. I hope that they start actually scheming some possessions up for him. They start scheming him open a little bit more, just because a lot of his catches he's more or less earned at this point. He's really tried to, get separation in space. He's got some big play potential for what he can do in open space against one defender. It's been really impressive. I think this team has really found its sort of niche with, they've gotten their 2 tight ends more involved slightly. Jacoby Myers is still doing Jacoby Myers things. I was just going to say,
the real question is, can Myers score a touchdown?
That's going to shake out at some point.
That's so crazy.
He's had at least 2 touchdowns in the last two. He had one in the Jets game, but he had 2 touchdowns in back-to-back weeks just pulled off the boards, either through penalties or plays called back. So it's going to shake out at some point. He's getting the volume to actually get in the end zone. At some point, that's going to break their way. Another person I've been pretty high on, and again, I'm not talking about the Patriots backfield at this point. No one's trusting that at all. No one's putting a lot of stock in the Patriots backfield, especially considering how often they rotate guys through. Even when you've got a lead back like Damian Harris, he's had fumble troubles this year for the first time in his career, it seems like. J.J. Taylor and Ramondre Stevenson, neither can really seem to establish a permanent role as RB2 in the system, but Brandon Bolden is just continuing to get snaps, and now he's getting a lot more involved in the passing game too. Week 3, 4 targets. Week 4, 6. Week 5, 4. Week 6, 1 target. Week 7, 7 targets. He's getting a lot of volume in this offense from a passing perspective, from just a snap perspective in general. He's the only back beyond Damian Harris who's seen a minimum 20% snap share. It's mostly sitting around 30s, and last week it was up to 60, I think. They're really starting to use him more and more. And if the Pats can figure out a passing offense, if they can actually start to take some leads, they're going to start running this ball more. And Brandon Bolden is the only back in this room, I believe, without a fumble this year. And if they're going to it in late situations where they can't turn it over, this team can actually start putting together leads and wins, then Brandon Bolden is going to be the guy they're handing it off to just keep things secure and not turn the ball over frivolously. Again, it's kind of like the Chiefs where there's – sorry, it's kind of like the Cardinals where there's so many options in this offense. It's easily not high caliber enough, but it's tough to tell you where the ball is going to go at this point. But I think the Pats are at least finding some sort of rhythm with how they're starting to manage these guys, and I think there are a couple opportunities, especially Kendrick Bourne, I think, still has below 10% ownership at this point. If you're just looking for a real buy-low option, plug in on a bye week, just a guy to sit on a bench, wait for an opportunity to shine, he is absolutely your guy.
Yeah, real quick about Brandon Bolden, the one I got scared off from him because I had him in a couple leagues. That week six game against Dallas where he had one target, like he just didn't play.
That one made no sense
to me because he has been good. I think he's
also now the longest tenured Patriot on the offense. He's stuck around since 2012 at this point, and this team's had so much turnover that I think he might be just period longest tenure because most of their offensive line is pretty young at this point too. I don't know how much you can count Trent Brown leaving, coming back. But, you know, Bolden's been there since 2012. He knows the system. Belichick clearly trusts him enough to keep him around for all these years, even though he's really never taken a lead back role. So you've got to have some faith in the guy.
Eventually.
And then he got one target, and I dropped him everywhere, and then he blew up.
Right. That's exactly what I did. So, by the way, just a little quick update. We had a Rodgers to Cobb touchdown. There was a flag, looked like maybe roughing the passer, so they declined it. It was a hell of a catch too, man. It was like one-handed. He was getting mauled. It came off an interception deep in Packers territory deep in the Cardinals territory, got one more for us, or should we move on?
I think we're good. The one other team that I did want to talk about is the Cleveland Browns, but I think we can kind of merge the two conversations at this point.
Can I ask you one more team then that I'm super interested in just hearing your thoughts on, and it's this 49ers team, and you can go with the running backs or the receivers or both and just kind of what's going to happen here. And it's, you know, Hasty returned. We're going to get Kittle back, if not in the next couple of weeks probably. Ayuk isn't getting a lot of work. Obviously, Debo and Mitchell have been kind of the two guys we've been able to lean on with this team. But I just kind of like wonder what's going to happen with this team as more pieces start coming back and this offense, you know, starts to take shape. Like, what do you see possibly happening as you've looked at sort of trend data with them?
I can't imagine that Debo Samuel is able to maintain his astronomical target share. I
think like 37.
He leads the league.
It is. It's like 37%. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah, just an unsustainable rate there. I think Kittle's going to come back just before he got injured. He had 19 targets in two games, so he's, you know, volume's obviously there. I think, honestly, it's a little dependent on what happens at the quarterback position. I don't know how much longer this 49ers team can justify sticking with Jimmy Garoppolo, especially after that Sunday night performance. I get bomb cyclone and everything. You can't put too much stock in that game, but it's been trending pretty downward consistently. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the one thing I really don't understand is Kyle Shanahan just consistently just absolutely sewering Brandon Ayuk in any public forum he gets. The guy's a rookie. Like, at one point you could throw the guy a bit of a bone. Like, he's just completely down on this guy. And I don't know if it's there's some 4D chess going on where he's, you know, all of a sudden week 9 or 10, Ayuk's gonna burst onto the scene and Shanahan's gonna have a sly grin under his play calling sheet or something. I don't know, but it doesn't make sense that a guy with this much talent and a guy that has Ayuk's athletic ability just isn't doing it. Choosing not to get him involved, it feels like the points. It's really
I mean, so he him. It's weird. Like, I read a stat and I sadly I can't find it anymore. I don't remember where I read it. probably on Twitter somewhere, but it was something like he was on the field for like 53 snaps last week or whatever it was. Like, let's just take that random number. He only ran 20 routes. That means he blocked like 30 different times he was on the field. Like, not all of those were, you know, running plays. They were probably, you know, he was like blocking for screens or whatever it is. But like, does he not remember how good he was in 2020? Like, this guy was the only receiver you had healthy for however long, and he performed very, very well, to the fact that a lot of fantasy analysts had Ayuk ranked higher than Debo and were dead wrong about it, because you just decided, like, ah, never mind, this guy's actually not that good. Shanahan, stop. Just stop, man. Like, it doesn't make any sense. So, yeah, that's kind of where I was trying to go with that. Any worry when that Hasty gets a little more involved and Mitchell might, you know, lose a little work, or even when, like, say, when Wilson comes back, that Mitchell just isn't a thing anymore, because we know how he likes to toy with running backs?
I mean, at least in the last few games they've had, Mitchell's been their best running back. He's coming off the heels.
Hasty has not looked good.
Well, Hasty's been back one game, so.
No, I know, but he was okay early on, but then it was like, it's rushing.
He was the leading back rusher in the Cardinals game. Lance had the most rushing yards in that game, but when they actually used Mitchell, Mitchell was the second highest rusher for the 49ers. He's coming off the 18-yard, 107 carry game with a touchdown, or 18 carry, 107 yard game. Sorry. my biggest thing is he's got four total catches in four games, or four total targets in four games. There's no space for him in this 49ers offense that I also feel like has a tendency to, you know, snaps get taken by jet sweeps from Debo Samuel, and running backs get used in the passing game. It's more of a collective sort of skill position player moniker that gets thrown on guys there. Shanahan's got guys doing everything on that field, but Mitchell feels pretty one-dimensional for this team. I do worry that he gets kind of put on the back burner a little bit as players start to get healthy, especially with Jermichael Hasty coming back. But I do see, if it's just going to be Hasty and Mitchell currently, I think Mitchell's still probably their best just pure rusher, but Hasty's going to outsnap him just because of what Hasty can do in the passing game as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think Hasty's pretty much relegated to the passing work, but it still doesn't mean he couldn't outsnap him. And so that hurts Mitchell, just because they're going to be down a lot too. So, all right, man, let's jump into our injury news here. And so what we do is we just kind of rip through the injuries, and then, you know, we'll pause on a couple to get your thoughts on like how it could impact things. And so we're just going to lump all these Browns together real quick just to get it out of the way, because there are so many. And so we got Baker Mayfield with a shoulder injury, obviously the torn labrum, and he's saying he could come back this week, which just sounds crazy. We got Nick Chubb, which looks like he's going to play, but obviously we know Hunt is on the IR still, so that is bad news there. And then, of course, the injuries to the receivers. Landry's dealing with a knee injury. Sounds like he might be, you know, favorable to play. OBJ, same thing with the shoulder. I mean, it's bad news all around. Like, I mean, do you, besides maybe Chubb, because I think, like, if he's back in, I find it hard to believe that anybody's going to sit him after what D'Ernest Johnson just did last week behind this O-line. What do you do with the rest of this team?
I think David Njoku becomes a massive, should be a massive free agency target. Him and Hooper, but I think Njoku, especially just because of his availability, this team is really going to have to start leaning on its tight ends to catch balls, because they don't really have too many wide receivers left to start catching them at this point.
Yeah, that unless Peoples Jones hurt too, from what I remember. So got hurt pregame last week or whatever, and I was like, I had him in my starting lineup. Like, we're trying to start this show, and I was like, and I was like, look over, I was like, wait, who's hurt? Ah, crap, because bye week, like, bye weeks killed me, and I had to throw him in there thinking that like nobody was healthy last week, and then it just that didn't work. So
yeah, and their next option, if for whatever reason both OBJ and Jarvis Landry end up out this week, their top wide receivers, Rashard Higgins at this point, and he's a guy. Yeah, he's fine. It's tough to know what to make of him. His highest volume game this year.
Felton, suppose he's like sort of a pseudo running back as well. So who knows?
Yeah, he's had a decent snap total since they suffered both of these running back injuries. I'm kind of there's some weird part of me that is thinking that a Demetric Felton breakout game is around the corner where. Get something weird like that, but the only reason that's coming into my head is just because the Browns are now left with Rashard Higgins, Anthony Schwartz, and like that's really who they have.
Schwartz be with you.
It's no.
You weren't gonna say it. I was going to. I was good in there. Had I known we were gonna do that, I would have worn my Star Wars shirt. But anyway. Yeah, no, I agree with you, man. But let's get going with the rest of these injuries. So we got Tyrod Taylor on the IR. Sounds like he's going to be coming back this week. He's really close. So that's going to be, honestly, a pretty big boost for this offense, as sad as it is. Davis Mills has been terrible. Zach Wilson out 2 to 4 weeks, PCL injury. Patrick Mahomes avoided a concussion somehow. Like, I don't know how somebody gets up and looks like they literally got their head knocked into a wall and he didn't have a concussion. Like, that one is mind-boggling to me. I wouldn't be surprised if they come out later and be like, oh yeah, no, he actually did have a concussion, we were just messing around.
Well, they brought the week prior, they brought the card out for Daniel Jones, who entered concussion protocol, and I've never seen them bring the card out for a concussion, and he played the next week.
I don't understand. Like, either athletes, these NFL players, have this like superhuman trait that they can get over concussions earlier. Because I know friends that have had concussions, and dude, they last weeks, if not months.
Yeah,
they don't go away in a week. Yeah, the NFL is kidding themselves. This is going to come to bite them in the ass soon, I think.
They've also had it's just incredible to see. This is a larger conversation about players coming back from injuries, but there's now reports that the Rams are cautiously optimistic about Cam Akers coming back from an Achilles injury he suffered in July.
Yeah, no,
mind boggling.
I've torn my Achilles, and granted, look, I was not getting the physical therapy and the treatment that he's obviously getting. But look, could he come back and run in 6 months? Sure. Could he come back and play a NFL football game in 6 months? How? I don't care how strong the other muscles are in your body. There's no way. I don't see how that happens.
But can you cut?
Yeah, I mean,
cut without like re-injuring yourself.
If you get rolled up on once, it feels like your career is
not. It's not even being rolled up on, man. Your Achilles will snap. It's not even getting rolled up on. That's like your knee and stuff like that. Your Achilles goes because you make a cut and like it literally just the tendon just snaps, dude. It goes and it rolls up the back of your leg. It is awful. Trust me. So
I'll take your word for it.
Taysom Hill still questionable with a concussion, and then Dak Prescott is questionable with a calf, but he's getting some limited work in. It sounds like he'll play. We obviously covered Nick Chubb here. Saquon Barkley questionable with an ankle. Sounds like he's going to be out. Miles Sanders questionable. He's week to week, so I don't even know why he's questionable. They should just list him as out, ankle sprain. Malcolm Brown is on the IR with a quad. They signed Duke Johnson to the practice squad, so expect to see him in the near future for whatever it is. Antonio Gibson questionable with a shin. Got a limited practice in. He terrifies me, man. Like, I don't know, Kale, what about you, man? Like, Antonio Gibson is just a guy that I don't have a share in him anywhere.
I mean, get into that. I'm pretty surprised by that. Could you elaborate on that?
He has a stress fracture in his shin. I have no idea how he's actually even playing through it. don't understand how he's playing through it and actually playing moderately well. I think it's going to go downhill pretty fast. And if he actually aggravates it more and more and more, and this team sucks, which they do, I think they're just going to pull the plug on him. So I mean, and you're seeing it in recent weeks. We're seeing McKissick get more and more and more work. I think he at best is like a mid to low end RB2 right now because of the injury risk. Could he blow up? Sure. But, you know, injury risk, I think, is just terrible for him right now.
No, that's definitely fair. I always get worried about, like,
I love his talent. I love his talent. I really do. And we saw it the first few weeks, but it's just, you know, we're seeing McKissick catch up in snap share for sure.
Yeah, there's no way this Washington football team can continue to be.
No,
I don't think they can justify playing him if they don't start stringing together at least a couple wins at this point, because at some point, you know, JD McKissick is
serviceable. He's 70, fine.
It's like 70% of the production an injured Antonio Gibson can get you, and just continuing to play Antonio Gibson is only going to hurt you long term, because I can't imagine this is, you know, good for his long term health. Like,
yeah, stress fractures. I mean, basically, they need just time to heal.
Yeah,
is really what it comes down to. Like, you know, I've played enough sports in my life where, like, I've known people that have stress fractures, and you just need to rest it. Like, there's nothing else you can do about it. Anyway, Jonathan Taylor dealing with a rib injury from the 49ers game. He's not going to miss any practice, so let's skip on that one. DeAndre Swift is questionable with the groin. I mean, I haven't seen anything that he isn't going to play.
This is also probably the best chance to actually get a win. I think this is their best chance to beat this Eagles team.
Was sort of 50-50 on that. By the way, AJ's a huge Eagles fan, so I kind of flipped a coin on that one, picked the Eagles, but I might go back and change it. I'm not really sure yet.
I am by far the biggest Dan Campbell sympathizer. No one does. There's not a lot of deserving in the NFL. No one deserves a win more than him with the just way he's gotten guys to buy in. Just like that first two series of the Rams game going
touchdown, that was incredible. Kick, I was like, is this really going to happen?
I just wish he kept his foot on the gas. Like, instead of doing the little, you know, clock rundown thing on fourth down, like,
yeah,
actually go for it. Like, yeah, like, just keep the pressure on. Keep your foot on their throat. Like,
yeah,
that's how you're going to win games.
Yeah, then the last running back one here is Austin Eckler. Obviously, I mentioned that he didn't practice today and was put on the injury report late this week. So this is one I think a lot of people are going to keep their eye on. And look, this is all the information we have right now. We're just bringing it to your attention. Watch it. Make the right decision for yourself here. I think if he plays, you're probably putting him in there. And there's just – he's been that good that you can't – it's hard to sit him unless you've just got a stacked running back team, which not many people do right now. So, AJ, go ahead with the wide receivers, man.
Yeah. Hopkins, who's playing now, obviously, but he's questionable to return with a hamstring.
Actually, I think he went back in the game.
Did he end up going
back? He at least ran back on the field and then came right off again. I'm not sure if they just pulled it. I glance at it every now and then. But
running on the sidelines, so – he was questionable to return. He may have returned, but it's still in question as to whether or not he is questionable to return. Jerry Jeudy is possible to return from the IR here. He says he's back and ready to go. We obviously know that it's up to coaches and medical staff, though. Terrence Marshall has a concussion. He is questionable. T.Y. Hilton is questionable with a quad. Devontae Parker is questionable with a shoulder and a hammy. Landry, we already talked about. OBJ, we already talked about. Antonio Brown is now doubtful with this ankle injury. He was spotted with a crutch, so he is likely out a few weeks. But the good news there is that Gronk looks like he is cleared to return. So keep an eye on him as well, just in case something weird comes up with that. Basically, the entire Giants receiving core is out with ankle, knee, and hammy, and that's Tony Galladay, Shepherd in that order. Terrence Marshall, we already mentioned. I don't know why he's on here twice. Jarvis Landry, we already mentioned. Who the hell wrote this?
I wrote half of it. I didn't write the second half of it. Just going to put it out there.
Julio is questionable with a hamstring. Kale, I want to get your opinion on Julio because we've talked about Julio a lot. And we've talked about his hamstring a lot. Pretty much every time we've talked about Julio, aside from maybe that like 328-yard game that he had or whatever the hell it was.
What game was that?
Didn't he have my last year? No. He had like a 200-plus-yard game a couple years ago. It was like his lone healthy game.
Okay.
I don't know. I'll find it. So, that being said, what are you doing with Julio?
Oh, we had 128 yards in week two. There you go.
I'm holding out just any it's a thread of hope at this point, but it's still hope. I don't know. I want Julio to be good. I thought I was this summer. I did the like Titans fantasy preview for Fantasy Six Pack, and I basically the whole theme of the article was regression. Ryan Tannehill couldn't continue to be the most efficient quarterback in football without Arthur Smith. Derrick Henry had to fall off a cliff at some point. I'm on a full apology tour at this point because I can't.
You got called out on our Slack channel, by the way, today. I don't know if you noticed that about the, you wrote the don't draft Derrick Henry, why you shouldn't draft Derrick Henry against, you know, at his value. Not that you shouldn't draft him, but like where he was going. But I'm with you.
Precedence with 2,000 yard rushing.
I get it.
Even the rule of 370, like he's defying all conventional logic. But my whole thing about the Titans wide receiver core was A.J. Brown and Julio Jones. There can't be two alphas. Someone's going to have to take over. And I would have to assume it would be A.J. Brown, but I was also still decently high on Julio Jones actually being able to produce in this system. In an ideal situation, they both require safety help. They both require – like, it's tough to put one-on-one matchups with both of these guys. And I get them. I've still, every time I think of Julio, it's going back to Super Bowl 51, catch on the sideline, some of his high flying stuff from, the late 2010s, and just such an incredible receiver.
But he is.
He's 32.
And injuries have, I think, killed him, dude. That's the only thing I can say. He's almost droppable at this point. Like, he's up there in like the OBJ range and Allen Robinson range where you're just, it might be time to be done. Like, because he's obviously injured and he's trying to play through it, and there's just nothing you can do about that. And it's like, if you can try to trade him, I mean, I don't know what you're going to get for him, but it's tough, man. I've had him on my bench in the one league I have him for a few weeks that he's been healthy, and it's not looking good. So
that, 2013 bye that they have too is like, If anyone in it, a lot of teams need buys, and this 17 game schedule stretching the bye weeks out to weeks 13 and 14 is pretty crazy in my opinion. I feel like it's way too stretched back. But I mean, man, could Julio Jones just use a little bit more time off where he's not missing more actual game time? Because I think if he can get right, the ideal version of this Tennessee Titans offense that everyone thought might have happened once this trade was completed, I think they're still, they're hanging in there. They're right at the top of the AFC. They're one of those, I think, at this point, there are six teams at the top of the AFC with two losses, if I remember correctly. It's pretty even up top, and I think the Titans kind of look like Carson Wentz is, keeping the Colts involved, but it looks like the Titans to lose right now, just given how they've been playing.
Their defense needs to step up a little bit more than what it has. But
it has come back. It has regressed a little bit to the mean from their
abysmal
start to the season.
Correct. Yeah, I still think they're not great, though. But all right, AJ, let's close this out.
So again, 2016, week 4 versus Carolina Panthers. Jones became the fourth player in the Super Bowl era to record a 300-yard receiving game. 12 passes on 15 targets.
Oh, I thought you were talking about this season. I was like, what are you talking about?
No, I was talking about his history.
Okay, that wasn't obvious. All right,
that's, to AJ's credit, that is still what I think every time I think of Julio.
Oh, of course. Yeah, he's amazing. He is and was an amazing player. More was, unfortunately, at this point. But
yeah. Tom comes for almost 58 all of us.
Career 100-yard games.
Yes.
200, a handful of 200 yards. So, I mean, yeah, he's past that point, obviously. But so.
But even just quickly before we move on, like, if we can get a healthy Julio, like, the people below A.J. Brown, Julio Jones on this roster, who Chester Rogers – Westbrook, Ekine, Josh Reynolds. It's
not great.
Yeah, like
even the tight ends aren't really performing like you would have hoped.
Yeah, I mean, I thought Anthony Firkser would kind of take over and step into the
didn't happen.
The Jonnu Smith role, and it just hasn't happened.
Nope.
Well, I think even like an 80% capacity Julio, which he doesn't look like right now. He doesn't look like he's even at 80%
no.
The way he's playing. But if he can get a little bit healthier, it makes a big difference. I think he could do some damage because there's just literally no one else to throw to on this roster beyond AJ Brown.
Agreed.
Yeah. So all right, we got Corey Davis.
Hang on. We just saw Tonyan catch a pass and he went down in a heap, grabbing at the back of his knee. That's not good. Now the Tonyan's been awesome, but like. He caught like a 40-yard bomb and then he got hit, but he went down. Like, he went down and just immediately grabbed it. So, that's not good.
Yeah. Ooh. Yeah,
no, all right. So, add to the injury list.
Okay.
You're about to get to.
Corey Davis, questionable with a hip. Curtis Samuel, questionable with a groin. Onto the tight ends. As I mentioned, Gronk is now practicing in full. He is good to go. So
come back, baby.
Not dealing with the rib. But I want to say OJ Howard was questionable. So not that matters if Gronk is back. Ebron, questionable with the hamstring. Evan Ingram, questionable with a calf.
Daniel Jones has no one to throw to.
No. You got sort of feel for this guy at this point.
It's like the offensive line has been declared as eligible. Okay, thank you.
Devin Booker and one receiver. I mean, that's it.
If the Giants decide to blow up things and move on, I think – If Sam Darnold can get another chance, Daniel Jones should get another chance.
He should.
Yeah. That Saints game is still sticking around in my head because he looked like when even this season where it hasn't been a great team, like when he looks good, he looks good, and it's tough to see him just completely have nothing.
I think the thing that's gonna cloud Daniel Jones is last season where he threw like 14 touchdowns in an entire season, which is like. Are you serious? Like, did that actually happen? That's not good, guys. But I mean, it's hard to fault him this year. Yeah.
I was gonna say he has a lot this year, and he had even less last year. So, and he's still got Jason Garrett calling plays for him. Like, there's not a lot. It's not a lot of positives going for Daniel Jones
That's gotta stop.
Yeah, like how did anybody think that was a good idea? And the Giants, like,
do you know who their GM is?
I do.
Yeah, that's why.
I mean, this guy literally just got fired as the head coach of
if anyone had
thin ice in hot, steamy Dallas for 4 years. And oh yeah, let's bring him in. Why not?
By the way, AJ, I just want to point out for the fact that we have figured out another way to completely shit on the Giants again. You're welcome, Keith Lott. This seems to somehow be some sort of trend. We somehow find a way to like talk about them and just total crap on them. It is fantastic.
But
it actually wasn't on purpose this time. This was Kale's fault.
No, yeah, this was on me. Sorry,
it's funny, though.
All right. Well, let's just finish things out here. So the best play of Daniel Jones's career is the 90-some yard rush against the Eagles where he just fell.
That should have been 95.
Didn't quite make it to that goal line. Didn't he fumble on that play?
No, he didn't. But
no, he just fell and looked like
he just fell and looked like an idiot. Yeah,
anyway, so as I was saying, Dawson Knox has knocked himself out with a fractured hand.
Man,
we already talked about Evan Engram, but we'll mention it again because suck it, Keith. And Hockenson is questionable with an ankle and knee. Oh, and yes, new to the list, Robert Tonyan is in a Tonyan pain in his knee. And defense, Khalil Mack, doubtful with a foot. Only thing that's notable there. So,
all right. So, Kale, I know you got to bounce, so we will let you kind of let everybody know where they can find you on the internet and what you got going on right now, man.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I mean, thanks for having me on. I love working with you guys. Nice to finally actually get on the six pack hour. You can find my targets and touches stuff. That'll usually come out Thursdays over on Fantasy Six Pack. I also do Any Given Sunday for Football Outsiders, which is an analytical breakdown of the biggest upset of every week. I split that with JP Acosta over on FO. I also do This Week in Social, nice little lighthearted wrap-up of all the quotes from around the league, following the biggest trends through the voices of players and coaches. That's over on FO. And outside of that, you can just find me on Twitter, at Kale Clinton.
Nice, man. Well, yeah, definitely. Thanks for coming on. It's been great conversation, and yeah, it's been a long time coming, man. I've been looking forward to this all season.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
All right, man. Cheers. Peace. All right, man. So let's finish up here, kind of rapid fire, as fast as we can with these DFS picks. I'll start off here with our stacks and smash plays. So obviously the stacks are, Josh Allen and Diggs, or if you want to go with Sanders or Beasley instead, they're 8,100. For Josh Allen, 8,100 for Diggs. And then you want to go a little cheaper and 5,400 and 4,900 for Sanders and Beasley. They play in Miami, and this is, as we've mentioned many times, this is not the Miami defense from last season. You can go against this team and have a lot of success, and I think the Buffalo Bills are going to have a lot of success. Mentioned Ryan Tannehill earlier and just, how this offense needs to find another target, but right now they don't. And Tannehill's not quite doing what he did earlier, last year and even the year before, and AJ Brown isn't doing what he did last year, but AJ Brown's been banged up, and last week he looked healthy. They are 6,600 and 6,900 this week, and they are facing Indy, and everybody's looking at Indy and going like, oh man, they got a great defense. Look, let's be real. They've got a really good run defense. They can be beat in the air. 30th points most against quarterbacks and 27th most points allowed versus wide receivers. So I think this could be a cheaper kind of sneak stack if you want to go that route. The other more expensive stack, which I love, is Stafford and Cooper Kupp. And 7,600 for Stafford, but 9,000 for Kupp. And there's lots of reasons why, obviously, that is a thing, because Cooper Kupp is just crushing it. And my boy JB over Razball is, he hates me for snaking Cooper Kupp from him one pick before him out of like the seven that I snaked from him in that league. But he reminds me of that one more often than anything. And I always remind him I wanted Robert Woods more. But Robert Woods was gone, so I took Kupp instead because I wanted the piece of this Rams offense. I
also wanted Robert Woods more.
We most did. Most did.
I'll settle for Kupp.
Right. It was like I wanted the piece of this. I wanted a piece of this Rams offense. I loved it with Stafford coming in this year, especially with Akers, being banged up, and it was just sort of like, okay, I'll take Kupp. Why not? And so yeah, I did, and great bit of benefits. Kind of individual player smash plays that I'm looking at, you know, maybe not everywhere, but, you know, kind of mix and match them here is Kamara. I get it. It's Tampa Bay. They've got a great defense, but I mean, his passing work alone keeps him in a PPR DK format. I mean, 15 targets last week. Yeah, that's probably not going to happen again, but he'll see close to double digits, even with Ingram coming in. I just think he's going to be a monster in this game. James Robinson is 6,600. Feels cheap. Seattle's defense has been awful, guys. Like, I don't know why he's 6,600. James Robinson has been really good, too. They're allowing a lot of defensive yards and the 31st most points allowed to running backs on DK. So, yeah. And the Packers just scored again. They are looking like they are going to upset with not a lot of people here. And it looks like it was Rodgers to Randall Cobb again. Wow. DJ Moore is another one I like here at Atlanta. I mean, look, we know Darnold's not performing well, but Atlanta is, you know, Atlanta is just not great. So, you know, volume alone here is keeping DJ Moore in the conversation. And I didn't write down his price for some stupid reason, but I felt like it wasn't like it's near the top, but it's not like crazy high to where, like, you know, he's at 7,200. So it's expensive, but, you know, he's another one of those, like, I'm going to look his way, you know, in building lineups, you know, and see how he could fit in somehow. Yeah. You want to do the fades here? I don't have a lot here with the rest. It was hard to find some fades in values.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were leaning this way last week, and I'm sticking with it again. The Seattle wide receivers, you know, yeah, it is the Jags, but it's also Geno Smith, not Russell Wilson. And Geno Smith is pretty awful. You know, I would say I would almost go with Daniel Jones over him, but it'd be a tight call.
No, not that tight of a call. I know what you're doing, but stop it.
Hi, Keith. But yeah, I mean, aside from a nice long play from DK last week, you know, really the last couple of weeks, he'd probably be a zero in general. So
yeah,
I'm just staying away from him, staying away from Lockett, you know, Freddie Swain.
Lockett's been nothing, dude.
Yeah, but, you know, Lockett's going to start having like three games where he's just going to blow up. Cause
not with Geno. Not with Geno, man. His offense is abysmal, dude. Like, yeah. DK saw like caught two passes last week. One just happened to go for like 75 yards and a touch.
Yeah.
It was bad. Really bad. So.
And then also looking at the Broncos here with Sutton. I mean, 6,400 is a little bit pricey, especially if Judy's going to be back. And it is against, you know, the what fuck the. So. I'm sorry, Washington football team. My bad.
Nice.
But I mean, Sutton's been awesome. It's hard to not want to go with him, but you have better options with that cost. So yeah. I would look at that. You know, and again, Jerry Jeudy, 4,900. So
yeah, that's a good value there. If those two kind of go hand in hand. Those two kind of go hand in hand where, like, Judy is a value if he actually is healthy and plays. And Sutton's a little too expensive because I don't think he's going to be able to hold, you know, hold. Like, this is not a good enough offense to be able to sustain, you know, two good receivers, in my opinion. So I'll finish off here with the rest of the value since you mentioned Judy. I got Boston Scott with Miles Sanders likely to miss. Look, I know this ball is going to get shared around in the backfield. I know what's his name? Gainwell is going to get some work, and they're even talking about Jordan Howard getting involved again. But Boston Scott, I would imagine, sees a lot of, you know, most of the rushing work here, and it's against Detroit. 4,400, pretty cheap punt play there if you want to go that route. I've got a tight end I like, and it's Darren Arnold, Jacksonville against Seattle. He's seen a good number of targets here with Jacksonville since he arrived. 8-5 total. Not done a whole lot with it, but you know, that's 2,800, and then another 2,800 if he ends up being healthy, because he is questionable right now, is with a shoulder injury, is Jonnu Smith. Last week he saw 5 targets for 52 yards, and you know, we were sort of, you know, throwing him out because Henry was taken over, and he has ultimately, but yeah. I mean, not by a long shot. He's just catching touchdowns, really. Like, Henry's target share was 4 last week, so actually Jonnu was targeted more. Henry just keeps catching touchdowns, which is not going to continue. Like, the trend of 4 in a row is going to end eventually. Yeah, I mean, there's not a ton of value this week. Like, DK has really done a good job pricing this week, in my opinion. You know, again, it's like injury guys that have really kind of been the ones that I've been able to find.
Yeah.
So, you know, again, we do some DFS articles on Fantasy Six Pack, guys that study this way more than me. You know, do the articles. I think Russell Gage at 4,200 could be sort of value. Like, he came back in his first week back was a lot better than I thought he'd be. I think Carolina's defense, as we know, is solid, but not as good as it was early on. So that's a big thing. Oh, by the way, a big fade, like 300%. You cannot use him as Tim Patrick if Judy is healthy.
Yeah.
Even at 4,700, I know that's cheap, but no, like, you can't do it. So
he's invisible.
He will be nothing. Honestly, yeah. He's like, he'll catch 2 for maybe a touchdown at best. That's my opinion with him. So, all right, man, I think that's it. You got anything else to add here? I know it's 24-14 Green Bay, top of the fourth. So it's going to be a good finish here. I'm actually really surprised at how well Green Bay has played without, their two best receivers and a bunch of defensive players out. And, I mean, just call it a Thursday game, I suppose, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised to see this being a Cobb game.
I picked him up a couple of different places.
Yeah, I was thinking about it in a couple, and then just totally shit the bed on waivers this week.
Snagged him in my home league and got 2 touchdowns out of it. Yeah, baby.
Yeah. So, but no, I'm good.
All right, man. See you guys next week. Good luck in week 8, unless you're playing me. Peace.